You are not in the mountains. The mountains are in you.
This is Mountain Escapes, a backcountry podcast, connecting backcountry enthusiasts like you with the legendary backcountry lodges of British Columbia, Canada. Each episode, we highlight one of BC's unique backcountry lodges through conversation with the lodge owners and operators.
One of the world's finest alpine settings.
Everybody has to have a transceiver, a shovel.
Mountain Escapes, a backcountry podcast. Your host is Brad Harrison, who's worked and adventured in remote settings his entire life. He's the executive director of the Backcountry Lodges of British Columbia Association, former owner-operator of Golden Alpine Holidays, and current owner-operator of Call West Alpine Adventures. Now, here's Brad Harrison.
Welcome back to the Backcountry Lodges of BC Mountain Escapes. We're super lucky here to be chatting with Marty Schaefer, owner, operator, and guide at Blanket Glacier. Welcome aboard, Marty.
So good to be here, Brad. Thanks for having me.
We know you're located in the Revelstoke area. Give us a little idea of where your lodge is and what kind of services you offer or to guests.
Well, southeast of Revelstoke in the Monashee Mountains, in the Gold Range, is Blanket Glacier Chalet. So like most of these lodges, it's a heli access right from town, so heli access only. And pretty excited to be calling the Blanket Chalet basically home my whole life. I'm really excited to get into the story of this. I've been involved in the, with the family, the Backcountry Lodge Association, for a while. But really excited to have this conversation finally, Brad.
So yeah, before we just jump into the story, Marty, I think a lot of folks don't really know about backcountry lodges and what they actually look like. Can you walk us through, you know, I fly up to your, in a helicopter to your lodge, I get out, paint me a picture of what the lodge looks like, what the inside looks like, what the surroundings look like.
The one word to summarize what it's like at a backcountry lodge would be character. And like the Blanket Chalet and many of the other lodges are filled with character. So I think that's just a product, especially some of these older lodges, and the Blanket being one of those, is it was a bunch of ski bums that put this thing together. So from flying up through this, V-shaped valley. No one else can access the terrain unless you get there by helicopter. You land at the front door. You know, we have a helipad that's facing the front door. Walking in, we've got a boot room, everything specifically set up for going ski touring. You walk in that, so the boot room, and then you bust into the kitchen right away. And then you've got a lounge pit, big dining table. Everything just has, you know, every square inch of the lodge has character. You can say that's a, you know, interesting building, but everything being specifically set up for ski touring and enjoying disconnecting. So you don't see Wi-Fi, you don't see screens. This really is character-filled backcountry skiing.
And I assume the scenery is spectacular from the front door of the lodge.
Well, I think that's one thing. And honestly, Brad, I feel like I took this for granted growing up. You know, you are in the middle of nowhere. You don't see, I mean, obviously there's a jetliner in the distance or something like that, but you don't see the crowds that you'd get in a place like Colorado. You don't get people ski touring through. There's not snowmobiles ripping by. It's just like this cozy little atmosphere. The trees look like they're out of Dr. Seuss. They're kind of covered in snow and kind of drooping over. You're just there with that one group. It's not a huge lodge. We have 14 guests, four staff in total. So it really is like, you know, you walk, if you're walking out the outhouse in the middle of the night and you just stop, it's like dead silent. There's a magic that's really quite hard to describe. Unless you've done it, it's hard to really to describe what that magic truly is.
And with all trips, the most important thing is always the food. Can you talk to us a little bit about your staff and what kind of food a visitor would expect?
You know what the funny thing with food in a backcountry lodge or, you know, anything in the mountains is you could make yourself a peanut butter and jam sandwich, and that could just be the best PB&J ever. So it's, you know what I always enjoy when people come, they certainly come for the skiing. That's what a lot of our guests come for. Awesome powder skiing, great terrain. But what I've been saying a lot lately is, you know, when the skiing is really bad, people remember the food. When the skiing is really good, people remember the food. So it's like, why not put a whole lot of energy into that? But what I've really enjoyed taking over from my parents is the lodge, the blanket used to be primarily just rental. So guests would come for 7 days. They'd provide their own food. They wouldn't be guided. And the last 10 years, I've been introducing the catering and guided program. So we actually do 4 days now and food's included. Obviously, guests would have an idea that it's deep powder skiing, all those sorts of things. But what blows their socks off is the food program. What's really exciting, actually, is my sister has taken over. She's one of the main chefs at the chalet. And she kind of found a passion with cooking through the lodge. I had her come on a trip years ago. It was actually a kids' camp that she catered. And it just totally lit the spark for passion. She went to Vancouver to culinary school. She now even cooks for these like high-end guests in Vancouver. The menu that we've developed, and especially with Heidi and our other head chef, Tara, who's worked at lodges for, I think, 35 years, this like wholesome, down-to-earth, well-thought-out, sourced food. Like we actually fly from a farm out of Revelstoke. That's where our staging is. And the beef that we use is right from the farm. The eggs that we get is from down the road in Salmon Arm. And so there's this certain level of like the atmosphere you get at the location and this locally sourced food. It's this is taste that you can't get anywhere else. So I love that you asked about the food because people come for the skiing, but they certainly come back for the food experience.
Can you talk a little bit about, I know you mentioned your family and your sister, talk a little bit about the history of your mom and your dad and your sister and how this all weaved into what the Blanket Glacier Chalet is?
I think that's what's so cool with all these lodges is there's just such unique stories how they've come to be. And so the history of the Blanket, it was actually a heli ski guide, a CMH heli ski guide in the area that saw the potential in the early 80s. So he grabbed a bunch of ski bums in Revelstoke, threw together this A-frame, and he had this vision of turning it into this adventure center. In the summertime, he actually stocked the lake with rainbow trout, even put a T-bar up on the glacier for summertime alpine ski racing for training. At that time, it was just a rental. My mom and dad actually were running telemark camps. That was the way that you would ski tour. The tele binding was the most efficient way for ski touring. So mom and dad would teach intro telemarking off the resorts in the Rockies. They did these big, long traverses from the Caribous to the Waddington. And they also rented lodges, Fairy Meadows being one of them. And then eventually Blanket Glacier Chalet. It was this great arena to teach telemarking and touring. But in 1986, this how the story goes, is Reiner, this German fellow, had to run back to Europe to save his marriage. And so it was kind of a quick sale. He approached my parents and was like, I need to get out of here. Would you guys be interested in purchasing this thing? They kind of dove into it. In 1986, in April of 86, they purchased the lodge. What's a really special photo for me is you can see my dad's wearing this big top hat. My mom's wearing this bow tie. And if you actually zoom in, if you look close in, mom's extremely pregnant. So my parents bought this thing a month before I was born. So it's kind of special to me because I really do feel like I was born into this this space. So you can imagine it was quite a journey for mom and dad. The industry was just not the way it was. It wasn't just a guarantee. Like right now, there's huge waiting lists to get into some of these lodges. But back then, the concept wasn't totally there. So I think it was a pretty big risk starting a kind of a new industry and a family. And they literally raised me up there. Obviously, like I didn't grow up going to school and everything up at the lodge. I actually grew up in Canmore, but spent everything from like 5 to 6 weeks a year while mom and dad were guiding up there and just organizing trips to, all through my high school and teenage years, I was up, you know, even dad giving me groups to go guiding. And it wasn't until I graduated high school, got a job on ski patrol that I kind of set my target on becoming a certified guide. What I think is really cool with my path to the chalet is I kind of found it on my own. It wasn't just taking over the family business. to me, I found my passion in, you know, through guiding, and then I brought that to the lodge because there wasn't a specific guiding operation at the chalet. Sure, my dad would guide and teach telemark skiing, but the way that we ski the terrain now is totally different than what they did. And the way we run operational guidelines was totally different than what the way mom and dad did. And then introducing my sister, she had, like I was saying earlier, she had this opportunity to cook. And that just lit the fire to go down this path of the culinary journey. So from that 1 week of cooking for kids, she's now producing this pretty high-end product. And she's found the blanket as this really cool arena to get, you know, gain recognition and, you know, have these amazing guests come through and just appreciate everything she's doing so much. That's a quick fast forward from like the 7-day self-catered, self-guided to the 4-day guided catered from Heidi and I. Yeah. And it's like, I think the guests really do see a ton of passion through it. I just totally love guiding. I love showing people an incredible time in the mountains. And Heidi certainly enjoys putting quality food and an experience on the table.
That's an amazing family story, Marty. I think it's incredible.
Mountains bring peace to the people.
This is Mountain Escapes.
Let's switch over a little bit to your guests. So what's your typical guest?
And I think it's a really important thing to me is to find the right guest. Ultimately, this is just totally my passion. So I want to be able to spend it with the people that I love. Years ago, mom and dad had, you know, their guests were primarily from Calgary and Vancouver. And I kind of used that model as well. And actually, just to really kind of like dive into the how the business model is laid out is 10 years ago, I started my own guiding company. I decided to call it Canadian Powder Guides. And for short, we just call it CAPOW, C-A-P-O-W. And the whole vision with that was I wanted to see a different style of guiding than the European old school style where the guide leads and the clients follow. I thought it'd be really cool to introduce the educational piece on every single trip. So it's not an avalanche course on every trip. It's a communicative way of guiding. We've got this big chalkboard at the blanket that we kind of go through the conditions. And then so the guests kind of know pretty in tune what's going on out in the field. So, you know, the guest that we're looking for is not someone totally new to ski touring. We're looking for someone that wouldn't have normally gone with a guide, but has some experience. So someone that, you know, has a higher level, higher fitness level, higher skill level, and just like looking to take it into this arena of backcountry pal. Typically, our demographic is from, you know, mid-20s to mid-40s, if I was going to put an age demographic to it. But we always kind of say it's like, as long as you're young at heart. We do have a lot of coaching through terrain features like pillows and couloirs, those sorts of things. But we also can just go and explore big, long, open faces. It kind of depends on what the conditions are like. Everyone at our operation brings their own gear. So it's like you have to have your own avalanche safety gear, you have to have your own ski touring gear, and we'll coach everyone on that personal stuff. So what I love about this topic too, in terms of the client base, is typically my mom and dad had the like 60-year-old granola muncher, huge backpack and telemark skis. That totally limited how far you could go on the terrain. But now with like technology of these boots and gear being super light and people coming with tons of fitness, man, we're still exploring areas of the tenure that my dad doesn't even know exists. It's like we can go so much further and we can link these different features up. It's kind of funny. I think back in high school years is I had such a hard time getting friends to come out and ski tour with me. Like I had a hard time. It's just, you know, park skiing was the cool thing. But what I love where the industry's going is like all of a sudden now backcountry skiing is cool. And it's like pillows out the front door. That whole concept is like blows people's minds. Now it's cool. Now the biggest names in skiing are hitting me up to come up to the lodge. But when I was a teen, couldn't get anyone to come. So now I'm just, I told you guys so. I told you this was going to be good. I couldn't be happier that the industry is where it's at in terms of backcountry skiing growing popularity. To answer the question you asked, where clients are coming from, it used to be Western Canada. Now we have got a lot of Americans. We have a lot of Europeans. I'm quite thankful that our reach has gone quite far because I actually met my fiance as a guest. She's an American, came up a couple years ago. Now we have a lot of friends from Colorado that have seen the potential for this untapped, like the backcountry lodge concept of being middle of nowhere and a lodge all to yourself, because that's a pretty special thing that I'm realizing as I travel the world, that we've got something in BC that is unlike anywhere else in the world.
British Columbia, Canada. is a backcountry skier's paradise. With epic snowfall, vast alpine terrain, and cozy remote backcountry lodges. Your adventure begins here at backcountrylodgesofbc.com.
This is the Mountain Escapes podcast, and we're talking with Marty Schaefer from Blanket Glacier. So Marty, there's 32 lodges or backcountry operations in the Backcountry Lodges of BC Association. What would you say makes Blanket Glacier unique as compared to those other lodges?
Working as a guide, I've gone to quite a few of these lodges, and it's almost a goal of mine to be able to see them all. I don't know if maybe I'm about halfway, and I think, Brad, you might be beating me on this one, but I've really enjoyed going to all these lodges and steal ideas from everyone. You know, every individual lodge has a unique way of doing things, but when it all comes down to it, there's a lot of things that we do similar. But one thing that stands out that I really enjoy about coming home to the Blanket is our terrain is not known as being super gnarly out the front door. So, a spot like there's a lot of lodges out there that put you in the big stuff. That's really cool. But when it's like you have the avalanche hazard really high, I really enjoy coming home to I nickname it the safety blanket, where I've got a lot of diversity of terrain that's really, safe hazard, you could say, by just managing. There's a lot of terrain options when the avalanche hazard is high. We certainly at the lodge don't have the amenities that some of these other lodges have. We don't have internet. That kind of stands out. I enjoy that. And I also enjoy the multitude of terrain when the avalanche hazard is high. The access to just endless tree skiing. You know, it's just really nice to have those treat options, multiple treat options.
I think that's been a thing throughout the industry that Blanket Glacier has great tree skiing. What do you have for plans for the future of the lodge? Do you have any major expansions or any other kind of plans?
You could ask me that question weekly, and I'm going to have a different answer for you. It's like, I'm dreaming. I can tell you that every week I've got a new plan. But the one thing that remains constant is that the character of the place needs to remain the same. I'm never going to run, I'm not going to flatten the A-frame and build a big fancy lodge, because I think a big part of why people keep coming back is the characterness of it and the history of the place. I mean, because of that, every year there's constant maintenance. I'm going to have to replace the roof here coming up. But that's probably the most important thing, is just keeping to the roots and keeping the character alive. So I look forward to you asking me that in the next week, but I'm always planning something, and every year we're adding something new.
Do you have any summer activities at Blanket Glacier?
My dad, he was the one that organized the tenure. And in that, he did have, we do have hiking as part of the tenure. I've dabbled with some things, and I think that one of these years, I'd love to do it. It might not be an official guided hiking program. It might just be an alpine sauna. It might just be a spot where people could run a small wedding or, have a stag or something like that, because it's absolutely gorgeous up there in the summer. So I'm actually honestly watching what a lot of the other lodges are doing, and I'm seeing a lot of success in the summer operations. And I do, I have a plan to do it, but I think I'm a year or two away before officially pulling the trigger on summer operations.
And would your winter guests, would they be summertime hikers or summertime mountain bikers, or what kind of activity are they likely to take part in the summertime?
In the last month, I've had two different groups, longtime ski guests, that have wanted to either bring their families up or come up for a stag. And, how I think that client journey looks is, it may not be the typical, we've got a lot of groups that are the same 12 people come every year. But what's cool with the summer side of it is, maybe there's a doctor from Vernon or something that's come up for years, and they're now asking, I would love to come up here with my family. It's a different demographic, but it's very similar in a lot of ways. And that's probably what's fueling my desire to do summer operations more than ever.
In your time running Blanket Glacier and being a ski guide and stuff, what would you say has changed the most with your clients in terms of what they expect and that kind of thing? Or has there been a change?
Oh, I mean, there's been a huge change. I laugh at how I got into guiding. It was like the telemark skier, maybe 60, I just keep thinking this 60-year-old granola munching, huge, massive backpack tele skier that might do two runs on some flat terrain, to where we are now, where like, you know, solid boots, really good skis. Where we're exploring now through like broken glaciers to massive long runs, we're skiing areas that, mom and dad didn't even think could be possible when they first bought the chalet.
In terms of your staff, have you noticed a change in skill level, expectation, that kind of thing from your staff? You know, all staff.
I think the biggest expectation, and it's all connected with guest expectation being, you know, they expect guides and food and the caretaker to be super dialed and the best in the industry. But the staff also expect that the clients are going to be some of the best. And that's kind of one thing that I work really hard on is getting clients that almost meet our expectations. You know, it's almost as just important that the clients bring a lot to the table, both with the avalanche safety to the fitness to, I think the biggest thing I'm looking for is respect for the mountains. And so I find that we have found this great balance of the guests are looking for a staff that delivers a certain thing. And then the staff are expecting that the guests deliver and have a certain level of respect. And it's kind of this, when it all comes together, it really is it's a special thing. I mean, that probably sums up the biggest fulfillment I get in running a lodge.
Skiing is a dance and the mountains always lead.
This is Mountain Escapes, a backcountry podcast.
You're known to have a big personality. You're a person of influence. What would you like to impart mostly on your guests and your staff? Like, what message would you like to send them away with when you finish your career?
The first word, I kind of said it earlier, is maybe respect. Being in the mountains, we can see the effect on things like climate change. I think we're in a position where we can inspire people to do everything they can. And I think that might be, as funny as that is, but ending with this level of respect, this balance of respect and a good time. When it comes down to it, I just love having fun in the mountains. It's just a great, great playground, but there's a way to do it respectfully. And that's kind of the big thing that I expect from all guests, all staff. And I hope that's the thing I kind of leave in this world.
One thing that's come up with the other lodges I've had these podcast discussions with is inclusivity. And, you know, typically our typical guest and staff are of a very specific demographic in Canada, probably not representative of the overall demographic Canadians represent. So how do you see becoming more inclusive of those other and different groups?
Well, there's one thing that's happened before and this is maybe a little bit different than the question you're asking, but I'll circle around. One thing that my dad started, actually, this has started before my parents even bought the chalet. There is a school group out of Vernon, BC, which is just down the road. There's these grade 11 students that have been coming up since 1983. They have to be fairly dialed with their schoolwork, but they basically, none of them have ever ski toured before. Well, some of them might have ski toured before, but most of them have never been in the mountain environment. And they have this opportunity of coming up to the blanket, dig snow holes, learn how to work together, learn how to survive in the backcountry. And they do this in like a 3-4 day program. What we do at the end of the year is we welcome this group up and we do it at, just make it happen for these kids. But what's actually really cool to kind of like dive into the question that you asked is, you know, lately I have been diving into understanding what has happened to the land before, you know, we got here. And obviously First Nations might have not been through this glacier environment, but what I just found out recently is actually last week. There was this popular fishing spot out of Greenbush Lake, which is this lake that we ski towards. I've just been connected with the local native branch there, and it's turned out that it's been like this long-running fishing hotspot. I was totally inspired by the story, and what I think is just so cool is like we have this really cool, unique thing in the mountains. I would love to use it as arena to just, you know, educate our guests, educate the community, and have it as this arena outside of normal just powder skiing to influence, I guess, everyone involved. I'm honestly quite excited to see what the next few years bring. I'm excited for the movement of communication with, you know, all user groups, both from having kids up. I'd love to have First Nations up. You were asking earlier what type of demographic we have. We already had last year, we had 50% female up. You know, it's a backcountry lodge. It's hard to get to, you know, there's a certain price tag to it, but I think that we can create different outlets for having everyone involved. And I'm excited to see what the next couple of years bring because I'm just motivated to make some things happen, Brad.
Where would you like to, a bit of a philosophical question as well as a cultural question, where would you like Blanket Glacier to be in 20, 40 years? Where do you see it being?
I think it goes back to the core value of just like bringing people together, connecting community, and just being real. Like, I just don't want to take it too serious. I want to maintain this wholesome environment. I hope that we never have cell coverage. It's this a perfect arena of disconnecting to connect with people. And I hope that in 20 years from now, we can still have that sort of arena.
Given how big an issue climate change is right now on the top of everybody's minds, how do you see climate change affecting your operation at Blanket Glacier?
It's amazing how 1 degree difference or half a degree difference can change everything. In November, we've had a couple atmospheric rivers come through. So these like dramatic weather events. And at the chalet, it's like, if we would have been colder by half a degree, it would have completely changed the snowpack. So we had a day of rain. We actually just got up the toboggans and we dug a hole in the ice and jumped in and we like had a great time. But the reality is, it's like, this is the winter time. In terms of climate change and experience, it's just, it doesn't take much of a change and it's going to be very dramatic for the experience. I don't think we're going to have, like when I have kids, I don't think they're going to have this experience and reliability of perfect powder snow all the time. The amount that I've seen, I'm gonna go on a complete rant here, but the amount that I've seen the Blanket Glacier recede is just like, I remember riding my snowboard across, it's almost not a kilometer, but it seems like it's half a kilometer of glacial ice that's totally melted out. And that much ice that's been melted out has probably affected even just local temperatures being a little bit warmer, which affects the snow that much more. These weather events that we get now are just these extremes. Typically, the Blanket Chalet hasn't got very much wind, but the last few years, we've seen these huge wind events up high. So snowpack is changing, experience is changing. Being so far away from everything, I think we're really seeing the effects firsthand on climate change.
And what do you do or what can you do from a small business perspective to do your part to limit climate change?
You know, I think it's those little things that do add up quite a bit. Locally sourced food, those sorts of things. I think some of the biggest things that we can do is, you know, some of these clients we get are from big cities. These are big corporate individuals. And I think we can inspire them by just even like the cleaning products we use, how we can have minimal impact or as minimal as possible impact on the environment. I think we can inspire them quite a bit. Our chef team came up with a menu that's reduced a lot of meat. You know, I think the biggest word to sum it up is inspiring these clients that we get to reduce their impact as much as possible. There's no doubt that we have impact on the land by, you know, flying a helicopter into the lodge. And, you know, we actually run majority of our power on solar and do a battery bank, but we do run the generator every once in a while to soup that up. I think because we see so much effect of climate over the years, it is inspiring for us to try to have as much of a low impact as possible. But when it comes down to it, to sum it up, I think we're in a position to inspire a lot of our guests to truly see firsthand what climate change has done. Because it's hard to see. When you're living in like downtown city, it's pretty hard to see the effects of climate change. But when you're up in the mountains, you can certainly communicate to these guests what's going on.
Well, you're certainly making people more aware, as you said, if they're in an urban setting, they don't typically see what's going on. Well, this is the Mountain Escapes podcast, and we're talking with Marty Schaefer from Blanket Glacier. Marty, we want to kind of end on a happier, a cheerier note. We wanted to see if you'd share one of your favorite stories from your time at the lodge.
Maybe it's not a favorite story, but it's definitely a lot of people ask me what the first memory of growing up at Blanket Chalet was. And I'm going to try to paint this picture for you. We now start the lodge November 15th, so we start pretty early. But typically in years past, we would fly in for Christmas. Mom and Dad and myself, we'd fly in and there's probably like 3 meters of snow on the ground. So you can imagine this helicopter rolls in, there's snow just like caked onto the A-frame. It's actually like pretty much buried. The front door is, you know, under 15 feet of snow or something ridiculous like that. So we land on this little bump with the helicopter. The helicopter takes off. This is the time of no radios. And so it was Mom and Dad and I must have been like 3 years old or something like that. The snow is so deep. So Mom and Dad start walking towards the front door and they grab their shovels and they start digging because you got to dig in the front door before you're even going to start the fireplace. I think maybe I was 4 because I was running around. I do remember that. So Mom and Dad start shoveling and I mean, I've heard this just from my mom's perspective. They're shoveling and they're shoveling and they're shoveling. And then all of a sudden Mom stops and was just like, "Oh, where's Marty?" And so it occurred to her that she hadn't heard from her four-year-old in a while. So probably like Family Circus, they started following my tracks from like tree well to tree well, and I was jumping off things. And eventually they found me head first into a tree well crying. I must have been there for over half an hour. And I just vaguely remember mom coming and grabbing me, just like grabbing my feet and pulling me out of this tree well and just being... It's just so happy that mom finally came to get me. Yeah, maybe not the fondest memory, but a funny memory of how different that was growing up in that environment, and what an interesting thing for a four-year-old to go through. Maybe I'll even answer to like some of my funniest memories is I got into snowboarding in a big way. So I actually built I found it really special to build a split board with my dad. I was 13 years old. I bought a K2 Fat Bob. I cut it down the middle. I bought this Volé kit. You were able to buy this first Volé split kit in, I don't know what it would have been, like late 1990s or something. And I used to race competitive cross-country skiing. So my uniform for cross-country skiing was also my snowboard kit, which was like a purple purple like kit that looked like a one piece. I just was so weird compared to everyone else that was telemark skiing. And I remember the photo being taken, but I walked up to the top of Blanket Peak and I would have been the first snowboarder up there at like, I don't know, 10 years old or maybe 11 years old. And I'm just like holding my hands in the air, like showing my muscles off, wearing these Airwalk snowboard boots and this purple suit that looked like a one-piece suit. You know, that really, and I was actually even like, you know, helping, I was tail guiding for dad, or I felt like I was tail guiding. But that was a really special moment for me, because I look back on that and I think that, you know, that might have really been that first time that lit the spark for me to go down the guiding road. Snowboarding down the blanket, everyone took a bunch of these small turns and I did the whole thing in like 10 turns. I think normally you can ski it in like 300 turns, but I just opened it right up and laid out these huge turns. And it just really, you know, lit the spark for me to have a whole life in the backcountry. And I'm excited to spend the rest of my life running this lodge and spending time in the backwoods.
It's been great chatting with you, Marty. Thanks for sharing all your insights and memories. And a big shout out to your mom and dad for putting two kids in such a great position and setting everybody up for visitors to come and enjoy your facility.
Brad, thanks a lot for having me. Really appreciate this. And I'm excited to hear the rest of the lodges. There's a story from all of us.
You've been listening to Mountain Escapes, a backcountry podcast. Sponsored by the Backcountry Lodges of British Columbia Association. Find them at backcountrylodgesofbc.com. The BLBCA is a member-directed association of privately owned lodges located in the major mountain ranges of British Columbia, Canada. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.